The city of Toronto has two championship teams. It's not the Leafs or the Blue Jays, not the Raptors. The Argos and TFC are the defending champions in their respective leagues. And my guest is the president of both. Bill Manning joins me in studio. Nice to see you.
Good to see you, Bob.
You mentioned off the top that one of the first interviews you did when you came to Toronto was with this program.
Yes.
I want to take you back a little further than that. I want to take you back to the beginning. You're a native of Long Island.
Yes.
Born there, grew up there?
So grew up actually born in Queens, and then my dad was NYPD, New York City Police Department, and we moved out to the island, third generation Irish Catholic family, and my dad basically mortgaged everything to get a home in Massapequa, Long Island. And so I was 3 and a half, so pretty much all my years growing up were in Long Island.
It's not that the Irish, I'm Irish, I'm Irish American. It's not that the Irish don't have a history with soccer. They play soccer there, but it is not necessarily the biggest sport. It is, so generationally, you may have come by your soccer interest in a different way. Yes or no? Was your dad a soccer guy?
No, not at all. My dad was a baseball, football, basketball, classic American sports. And but he was a baseball player in high school and then went into police department. So I played all sports growing up. And he stuck me out on a soccer field one day. And just over time, that was the sport. I kind of, I was around a good group of guys. We kind of all grew up together and wound up having success on the soccer field. And athletically, that sport suited me the best. And, I wound up getting a scholarship and moving on and stayed with it my whole career.
You went to the University of Bridgeport?
Yep. Yeah, with Manute Bol.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, you remember Manute?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so Manute was there for one season when I was in college. And we were a little Division II school. And you had this 7'7", center playing Division II ball, which was, centers in Division II were 6'4", 6'5", and he was 7'7". We had a lot of fun, though, because Manute was a soccer fan. He'd actually come out to the games, and he was, we miss him. He was a good soul.
Where is the University of Bridgeport?
It's just up I-95, and so in New York, you pass Westchester County, and you go right into Fairfield County, and it's in between Stamford and New Haven.
So it's in New York State?
No, in Connecticut.
It is in Connecticut.
Yeah, in Connecticut.
I was going to say.
It's Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Oh, okay, good.
Right on the Long Island Sound.
How'd you get back home from Bridgeport?
So it was an hour and a half. So it was easy. Not a bad commute.
I
lived there, but my dad used to come to all my games.
Didn't get on the ferry and go to?
No, because that would be out in Long Island. So I was in the south shore of Long Island.
Okay.
So we just kind of went around the Throgs Neck Bridge and then came back around Long Island.
So you start playing soccer and you have an affinity for it. And obviously you have some talent at it. Did you see it as a career?
No. I wanted to. So when I was younger, you remember a team called the New York Cosmos?
Mm-hmm, of course.
So they were playing and got all these,
Pelé.
Fans, and my dad used to bring me to Giant Stadium, the old Giant Stadium, to watch some of the games. And I really was like, hey, maybe I can be a pro. And then that league kind of went south. And there was an indoor soccer league, but I didn't really want to do that. And I will tell you, though, I wanted a career in sports, not necessarily soccer, but I did want to work in sports and kind of didn't know how exactly to go about doing that
right.
And fell into it eventually. But I didn't think, back then, I did not think I'd make a career out of soccer, and so I'm really fortunate to have done so.
You majored in marketing?
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
Business degree.
Yes. My undergrad, I got in management and industrial relations. And when I graduated, I literally didn't know what I wanted to do. And
sure.
So I actually stayed on for my master's degree another year and a half. And I wound up actually getting a job out of college with a company I interned with. And I was playing semi-pro ball on the side and then kind of got lucky. And I wound up getting a job in sports, and it kind of led to everything.
This was not necessarily a career ambition. I get the feeling that you were like so many kids. You get out of school, you got your degree, and you don't really know what you want to do with it.
Yeah, no, I did want to work in sports. I remember the owner of the New England Patriots before Bob Kraft was a guy actually from Connecticut. He had Remington, I think Remington Razors or something was his company. And I actually wrote a letter to him.
I'm blanking on the name, but yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about.
And I actually wrote him a letter saying I was graduating college. He was a benefactor for our college. And I said, I'm so interested in sports. I would love to work for the New England Patriots, you know, under your ownership. And I actually got a letter back from him saying, tough career. Maybe not sure this is the world you want to get into. But I tried. I mean, I sent my resume to the New York Yankees, New York Mets, New York Knicks, and, you know, everybody. And then eventually, though, over time, I got a bite. And I remember it was with a little indoor soccer league called the Continental Indoor Soccer League. And they offered me to go out there and be their director of marketing. And I was still young enough that I could play. And so I actually wound up playing with a USL team while I was out there making some extra money. And then from there, I actually got fired in that job. It was my first job because I was playing too much. But then luckily a team was starting back in New York and a friend told me about it. And I went and I reached out to the owner. There's a team called the New York Fever. So this would have been in late 1993. And he said, I'll pay you $2,000 a month to play. And then I said, well, you know, I really am trying to make some more money than that. And he said, well, and I told him I was working in marketing for this indoor soccer league and I'd worked for my dad's company, have a degree. And he said, I'll pay you another $1,000 a month to work in the front office. And then he cut that deal with me and a couple other players. But the other guys couldn't care less about the front office. And yeah. I was 28 at the time and I knew my career in soccer wasn't not going to go anywhere. And I said, I'm going to make the most of this. And I really went into it. And I sold sponsorships and I sold group tickets. And I did all these things that you do in minor league soccer. And I'd leave at 3 o'clock and go play. And it led to a career.
You said you didn't see yourself in a career in soccer, but you didn't see yourself in a career as a player in professional soccer. But at the same time, there was tremendous turmoil through the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. In soccer, leagues starting, folding, big leagues with big money behind it.
Yep.
You know, you talked about Cosmos. We had the Toronto Blizzard here, yep. Fort Lauderdale Strikers. Yeah. I mean, I can remember many of the franchises in it. And when Pelé and comparable international stars were playing for them, they had 70,000 people at Giant Stadium for games. And yet that league wound up folding.
Yep.
Did you have any idea that soccer would be revitalized in North America?
You know, when I thought it had a chance was with the 1994 World Cup because they sold out every stadium. Mm-hmm. And which, as a soccer guy and a player, you always knew it wasn't the NBA, it wasn't the NHL, it wasn't Major League Baseball. But you enjoyed the sport and you were hoping that maybe one day it would explode. And the 94 World Cup basically started Major League Soccer. And you had some, you know, Lamar Hunt, Phil Anschutz, and Bob Kraft, really the guys that got that league going. And it went through tough years. I had a team folded on me.
Tampa Bay.
And it was very, very difficult. But those were smart people, and they were willing to make the investments they needed to make. And then all of a sudden, we stabilized, and then these expansion franchises came in, Seattle being the biggest one that turned everyone's head. And when Toronto came in with the crowds they got, and then sure enough, it just built. And I think it took almost many generations, not one generation, but it took a number of generations for it to finally be what I would say in the everyday narrative. You knew someone who played soccer, you played soccer yourself, and you were around the sport, and you familiarized yourself so that it wasn't foreign. You know, when I was young, my dad had no idea about a soccer ball. It was foreign.
The Tampa Bay experience, your team won 4 games the first year. I think
no, second year.
Second year?
First year we were good. Second year was the absolute disaster.
Is it still the worst record in the history of MLS?
No, actually, there is a team, DC United, that actually had a worse record.
Thank goodness for that.
Thank God for that, because I was hoping for the day that would not be the worst.
It's not surprising, then, that the franchise had difficulty drawing a fan base. I mean, yep. I think you won 2 of your first 3 games or something.
We actually were 2-1 our first 3 games, and then went 4-21-2.
Yeah, good. Not too good.
Not too good.
Do you remember the Tampa Bay Rowdies?
Yes, yes. And they still had a big nucleus of people in that town that remembered the Rowdies very fondly, and the Tampa Bay Mutiny were not the Rowdies, you know, and that was very clear to us.
Was that failure the economic failure of that franchise? It was owned by the league.
It was actually owned by the league. That was the challenge. We actually worked hard to try to get the Glazers to buy the team, and they wound up going out and buying Manchester United.
They upscaled a bit.
You know, I got to know Joel Glazer really well. He's a great guy. It just needed someone that was going to, you know, be the benefactor for that franchise for a while until it could turn the corner. The other major challenge, which as the league had inherently, was we played in two big stadiums. So we played at Raymond James Stadium, which gives you zero demand for season tickets because you always know you can get a ticket.
Yeah,
so you
60,
can walk up day of 60, game, 65,000 seats. Yeah. And you couldn't build a season ticket base. And so when Don Garber and the owners started to mandate these soccer-only stadiums, 20,000-seat stadiums. And Lamar Hunt was the first. He built one out in Columbus. Right. And that now you control your revenue streams, and you can control demand by having limited tickets.
So the Tampa Bay experiment ends.
Yeah.
Now what?
Crossroads. That was a very, very difficult time for me. Luckily, I was under contract. And I remember my dad telling me, he says, look, probably never again in your life are you going to have a year where someone pays you to do nothing. And so I actually took advantage of it. And I took about the first 6 months, and I just enjoyed life with my wife and my, I had, you know, my boy was what, three then, and just kind of enjoyed things. And I helped actually the league. Ivan Gazidis, who's now the CEO of Arsenal, asked me to help him out with a project at the league office, which I did. And still kept my relations with Don Garber. And I remember New England came after me, but I didn't want to go back at that point. And then I started in late, you know, fall of 2002, which was kind of it folded in January of 2002. I started putting out feelers, and the Tampa Bay Bucks offered me a job. Joel offered me a job to work with them. But I actually was introduced to the Houston Rockets, and they had a vice president position open. And what I needed is I needed more business experience. And there was a vice president of sales position open. And as a president and a GM, and back then in the minor leagues, and even Tampa Bay Mutiny compared to what we are now was relatively a minor league at that point, how we ran it. And you do everything, right? So I did have some sales experience, but I really needed, I felt I had the soccer experience. I needed to build up the business experience. I knew I would get back to MLS one day. I will say that. I knew one day, but that wasn't the time. And I think, looking back, I was very smart to make this decision because I went to work for a guy named Tad Brown, who's the CEO at the Houston Rockets. And Don Garber, the commissioner of MLS, actually was a recommendation for me. He told Tad that, you know, this is a guy you should hire. And everyone, people know me back in the day, call me Billy. So Don calls me Billy, and Tad does. Tad's still the CEO there, and he's a great guy. We had a great working relationship, and I killed it. We opened the Toyota Center. We had Yao Ming there at the time, and I put my head to the ground, and I actually sold a lot of my, I think I sold $10 million in my year and a half there, and made an impact. And there was a headhunter named Buffy Philippel, who was representing the Philadelphia Eagles, heard some good things about me, and called me and said, the Philadelphia Eagles are looking for a VP of sales to be in charge of all their sponsorships and premium seating and suites and all that. And I'd like you to go out there. And I went to Tad. Tad said I had his full support. And I went out on a Tuesday. I interviewed with Joe Banner and Mark Donovan on a Wednesday. Mark Donovan is president of Kansas City Chiefs right now. And on Thursday, they offered me the job. And then I took that and, you know, Super Bowl champions now. But it helped me lay the future groundwork for what I've done in MLS.
With Bill Manning, the president of TFC and the Toronto Argos. So you're a general sports fan, but your focus, it seems, is soccer. It's the sport you chose to pursue. It was the business you chose to get into. Now you've gone from some minor league soccer to a league that is at the top of the food chain in North America, at least.
Yep.
That doesn't work out. Now you bounce from the NBA to the National Football League.
Yeah.
Tell me what's the first thing you notice? I mean, go back to Houston. You walk into the Rockets office. What's the first thing you notice other than there's more people there?
I was going to say more people. because it was large, you had a lot of people that were very career driven. And I remember it being very, I think I used the word cutthroat, but it was just, you needed to get the work done and you needed to be the best sales guy. You needed to be the best marketing guy. And Tad's still there for a reason because he's really good. He's a really good CEO. And he was a senior vice president of sales when I worked for Tad as CEO now. But it was more competitive. And there was better people. There was, you know, amongst the staff who I worked with, there was a lot of enterprising people that it made the competitive juices come out. And that set me up, I think, for future success because I knew, seeing how it operated in those leagues, I knew I had what it took to put in the effort and building relationships. But it was, you got to get after it.
It must have been eye-opening for you because you worked, you know, and I'm supposing here, because you worked for, you know, in soccer for a number of leagues, yeah. Franchises that were real mom and pop,
yes,
real
yes.
Small.
Yep.
And then Tampa Bay, that experience doesn't work out. But even by your own acknowledgement that, you know, it's nothing like, was nothing like it is today.
Our local revenue in Tampa weren't even a tenth of what we're doing in Toronto.
There you go.
Yeah.
So now you go first to Houston in the NBA and then to Philadelphia in the National Football League, a complete culture change. Were you absorbing the ambience, the feeling, why these leagues are as big as they are while you were there?
Very much so. I mean, you know, I joke about the Philadelphia Eagles. So our local church, my wife and I would go to, when the Eagles were in the playoffs, he'd wear an Eagles jersey. And he'd say it's because God was an Eagles fan.
The priest.
He was on Monsignor Parlante. And it just showed you in that town, it's similar. I equate it to the Maple Leafs here in this town. In that town in Philadelphia, you were an Eagles fan. Like you had green in your blood. And I was so happy to see them win it all this year. And you know, every kid, there's a song, actually, Fly Eagles Fly. And literally every kid growing up learns that song. And it's in the culture. It's in the DNA of Philadelphia. And Houston Rockets didn't have that. The Eagles, though, it's in that town. And that, to me, was like, wow.
Now, you had to assimilate that because, I mean, you're growing up in Long Island. I mean, I don't think you had any – you probably spent no time thinking about the Philadelphia Eagles or
the
culture of
the team.
Well,
they were the rival of the Giants.
Well,
right?
Yeah.
That's how I looked at them.
Yeah. And now, all of a sudden, here you are. You're one of them.
Yeah. And they took – they took really good care of the people. Jeffrey Lurie is a great owner. Their president, Don Smolensky, is a good friend of mine. I actually played soccer in college. He was the CFO when I was there. But when you work there, you feel it. You just feel it. And to this day, I grew up a Giants fan. My dad is a diehard Giants fan. He still would refuse. He'd always wear his little Giants polo. So he'd come watch the Giants play the Eagles at Lincoln Financial Field. And I'd be like, Dad, don't wear a jersey. Like you know, and he's an old tough guy, New York City cop. And he'd still wear his little white polo, though, with the New York Giants on it. But I fell in love with that organization. And it was very difficult to make the decision to go back to Major League Soccer because I was one of the top three or four business executives at the Eagles. I wasn't on the football side at all. But Tom Heckert, our GM at the time, actually became a good friend of mine. And our wives became friends. And I used to pick his brain a lot on football and how he operated as a general manager. And I noticed a lot of how Andy Reid operated and I took all those things actually from the Eagles and my thought process as I went forward into Major League Soccer because I made mistakes in Tampa and in the minor leagues before that I had some success, but in Tampa I made some mistakes and I wanted to see how a big league operation ran. So even though I was on the business side, I actually got to know a lot of the coaches well and Tom, you know, fairly well. And to learn how they operate. And that's the biggest of the big, the NFL.
So I get the sense when you were in Tampa and that franchise folds and now you're essentially out of work, that your ambition continues to be soccer, that somehow you're going to find your way
there. And part was my own. I wanted to prove I could do it.
Sure,
like,
I think everybody understands
that. Last year was a disaster of a year, and I was like, that's not me. That's not how I want to leave this sport.
Yeah. So you go to the NBA. You're there for 18 months
year and
or
a half,
so.
Yeah.
Then to the Eagles, you're there for four years.
4 years, yeah.
And then Real Salt Lake calls.
Yeah.
Was there any by that point, you clearly hadn't gotten soccer out of your blood.
You know what, I don't you know think what you would have taken I actually became a fan of the game again. I kind of had a little bit of a love-hate relationship with the game after what happened in Tampa. And I started coaching my son's team. My son is a senior now in high school, but he was a young boy then. And I was coaching his team, and I was having fun. I enjoyed it. I actually, when I made my career choices, I actually went and got my A coaching license because I thought I'll get into coaching. And I decided to, or fate took me the administrative route. But when they called, it was actually a headhunter from Turnkey Sports, Len Perner, and he said, look, I'd like you to meet Dave Checkitz. And Dave was a guy who I knew about. He was the CEO of Madison Square Garden, used to run New York Knicks.
I know Dave, yes.
Oh, you know it. And if you're a New Yorker, you know Dave Checkitz. And I remember telling Len, I said, look, Len, I'm loving what I'm doing. Life is good. I'm good. And I actually turned down even, and then he called back a month later and said, look, take the meeting. And I have a good friend of mine who I grew up with, a guy named Chris Bevilacqua, who was friends with Dave. And I called Chris and he said, look, go meet Dave. And I actually wasn't eager, but I get a chance to meet Dave Checkitz. And a half hour meeting with Dave turned into 2 hours. And I was like, man, this guy knows something. He was like, look, I'm telling you, soccer is going to be kind of the next sport that really emerges. And he's a basketball guy. I mean, Dave Checkitz is a basketball guy. And he said, I want you to come out to Utah and see what it's like. And you know, Utah, I was like,
end of the world.
I didn't know where Utah was. And I've moved in my career, don't get me wrong. But it's funny, my wife wouldn't go on the trip with me. She's like, look, we're
Salt Lake?
Yeah. She's like, look, we're not moving.
Now, were you living in Philly?
We live in Philly, yeah. We had a nice little home in a town called Chad's Ford, just outside of Philly. And I worked at NovaCare Complex, and she's like, you can go. And so I did. I actually went on my own. And then when I came back, they offered me the job. And I said, look, I can't take the job. You know, my wife's not on board. And then they called back 2 weeks later, and Len called me, and they offered more money. And this, I actually turned it down again. I turned the job down 3 times. And like a month later, and I remember it was right after the Pro Bowl, we got a call at my house. And this was when you still had landlines. So I remember the phone ringing.
I still have a landline, by the way.
Well, this is back
dinosaur that I am. Yeah.
And so I actually remember the phone ringing, and you know, then you don't think anything. And my wife is on the line with someone. She comes up and she hands me the phone and says, she'd probably been on the phone for about a half hour. Says it's Dave Checkitz. And so Dave actually.
Did he give you hell?
No, for turning it down. He actually convinced my wife that Utah.
Oh, he talked to her.
Was the place to go, and so. Dave got, and literally his first line to me, he says, well, I got your wife on board. Now it's time to get you on board. And I said, look, Dave, if Jennifer's on board, I said, I'd like to make the move. And we worked it out financially, and it was one of the best moves we ever did. And Dave was a great mentor for me. Dave is actually the guy who I called when I heard Toronto was looking for a president. And Dave called Larry Tannenbaum on my behalf. So Dave had sold the team in Salt Lake, which kind of precipitated me looking to move. But Dave called Larry because they used to sit on the NHL board of governors together, yeah.
So how'd an Irish Catholic boy and his family from Long Island wind up in Salt Lake City among the Mormons there?
Yes.
How'd you make out with that? How'd that work out?
Look, Utah is actually a beautiful place.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Spectacular.
But it's not like
it's
everywhere
quirky.
Else.
Yes, I call it quirky, if that's fair enough. I can call it quirky.
I'll buy quirky.
We found a little Catholic school for my boys to go to called Juan Diego. Yeah, it was Juan Diego Catholic, and most of the people there were from elsewhere. And so you kind you had a commonality immediately with different families, and we wound up having a good experience with the boys there, and then what you find is once you get past the quirkiness of the Mormon religion, they're good people. They keep their homes nice. They're family people. They love their sports teams. I mean, the Utah Jazz are you know, if you've ever been to a Jazz game, those games get rowdy and they're loud. And then what we started building in Salt Lake was this great culture there. And then we eventually got to the point after we were winning, we sold out every game. And it was not bittersweet to leave because I was ready to leave, but we look back really fondly on those years. And I actually still have a home there, the home we lived in, that I rent to a Delta pilot.
Oh, really?
It's Delta Hub there. And so he rents the home, which is great. And we don't intend to keep the home, but we actually have a, it's a good tax savings, and he covers it, you know, our mortgage, and so it's good.
Now, I've been to Utah, but I haven't lived there.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
When you get off the plane, right? You
see geographically, it's spectacular. I mean, the West, it's the West, right?
Have you been to Park City?
Yeah.
Park City is not like Salt Lake.
Well, no, I grant you that.
Okay, okay.
But I'm just wondering how, I mean, I find it somewhat dull.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fair?
Yeah. No, that is fair. That is fair.
It's like,
but you can find your, if you like to go out for a beer, if you can find places. You just got to look harder. There's not a bar in every corner.
Yeah, you got to look. I mean, that's the whole point.
You got to look a little bit harder. But it's there, you know? And so if sports is your thing, you have the Jazz, you have U of U football, you know, BYU football, you have Real Salt Lake. But it was, you had to look a little further. That's why we loved going to Park City, because Park City, you wouldn't think you're in Utah.
Well, no, that's vacation town.
It is. But for the locals, you know.
Well, yeah, so there's 10,000 locals and there's 100,000 tourists. Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Not during the summer.
Well, no, but in the wintertime.
We'd go up there a lot in different places.
Did you go skiing?
My wife did a lot.
Yeah, and you're not a skier?
I'm not a skier. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It's a danger. I
always had a fear of breaking my leg.
You want to see the scars?
Did you?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, the skiing career.
I was smart not to do that.
And everything else came to an end. So you win an MLS Cup.
Yeah, 2009.
Runners-up in 2013.
Yep.
CONCACAF Champions League 2011.
Finalists 2011. That's where I am now.
8 years.
Yeah.
With Salt Lake.
Yeah.
And you said a couple minutes ago there came a time to leave.
Yeah. It's why? When Dave Cech had sold the team.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah. Yeah. So Dave had brought on a minority partner by the name of Deloy Hansen, who I had a decent relationship with. But he was just different. Different operating style, much more hands on. Dave believed in giving you the keys, but he still owned the car, right? And so, hey, you're driving the car, but I still own it and drive it well. And Deloy was a little bit of a different owner, is very, very hands-on. And I could tell over time that my role was very much diminished. And I felt that I had built up enough of a pedigree within the sport. And actually, where I look back at my NBA and NFL experiences, not a lot of guys that have the soccer experience and the business experience. Mm. So I felt that I built a niche for myself to really, truly be a true team president or CEO that could oversee the business, the team side, the stadium side. And the team side is my love. I love being involved in all that. But that's what Toronto wanted. That's what MLSE wanted, is they wanted someone to run the gamut that could oversee every aspect of our organization. And it was a perfect move. But it was when Dave Cech had sold the team, I still had another, I think, 2.5 years of my contract. But I knew. I was like, okay, finish out my contract. I'll keep my eyes open and continue to do well, which I did. And before I, like, my contract ended in June or July of 2015, I had called Dave in February of that year to call Larry and just to let him know I was coming out of contract.
And 2015, you take over, you're announced as president of...
At the very end of the season.
Of TFC.
Yep.
And the ride has been interesting and fruitful since then.
It's been good, yeah.
We want to get to that ride and then a return to football.
Yeah.
As president of the Toronto Argonauts, a lot more recent and a lot of work to be done there. We want to address all those things. Let's take the break first.
All right.
Bill Manning is the president of TFC and the Toronto Argonauts, this time on Spotlight. Twenty-two minutes before the hour. This is Spotlight on Primetime. Bill Manning is the president of TFC and the Toronto Argos, and he joins me in studio. It's 2015. It's late in the year. You finally got out of Salt Lake, and you decide to come to Toronto. To say that now in the context of what's happened the last 2 years doesn't sound the least bit surprising. But let's go back to 2015.
All right.
What was it about the TFC that you found attractive, appealing, motivational? They'd been horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Why did you want this job? He's won championships at in Salt Lake.
Yeah, no, a few things. You know, my dad gave me words of advice here again, too. He said they can only go up. So it's a good situation to be in if they can only go up.
We thought that for about 10 years,
so,
and it didn't happen.
So, you know, that was one part of it. You know, I actually was in conversations with a number of different owners in the league at that time. And I remember when I got the first phone call from Larry, I wound up coming to visit three different times within 2 weeks and met with Larry and George Cope and Guy Lawrence at the time and you know, wound up going on a neighborhood tour and really got a feel for what the town and what the franchise was all about and what they aspired to, and didn't meet with Tim Leiwicki at all during this process because he was,
Why? He was
on the way out, you know, and I think Tim was gone a month after I joined the organization. And I have nothing but good things to say about Tim. He was fabulous to me during my time here. Funny Tim story. So Tim reaches out to me, congratulates me, and says, "Hey, I would love to sit down with you for a half hour." And we went to the Chase downtown. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, he ordered a bottle of wine, and 30 minutes turned into about 3 hours.
Mm. And that's like
we had a great time, and he is a brilliant guy, and he really helped set this franchise in the right direction. And so I could see that they were willing to spend the resources to be competitive. They also wanted someone to run the show, like I was used to with Dave Checketts, and they give someone the keys, and they say, "It's yours to run." And you kind of, you know, report in quarterly to the board, but you have the autonomy to do what you need to do. And I felt my style and my my management and leadership chops, that works well for me. And I thought it was a city that, you know, we kind of came and we really enjoyed it. It's a big city. It's similar to where I grew up in kind of New York, that it's vibrant and there's a lot of things going on and there's a big sports culture here. And I just, like, you know what? I'd been away from the East Coast for a while. The Philly's more the Mid-Atlantic region. You don't really think of that as the Northeast.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? This kind of gets me back to a big city, a big town, and a team that, as my dad would say, could only go up.
So you had to drag your wife to Salt Lake City. Did you have to drag her to Toronto?
Or was she a little more receptive? But she was
reluctant?
She was not reluctant. She was ready to go, but she had built up a life and good friends, so she was a little sad, a little tears, but she's been fantastic, and we actually celebrated 25 years in February.
Congratulations.
So she has moved with me everywhere and put up with me with all these crazy jobs, but She was ready. She wanted to move, we've created a great little life for ourselves here in Toronto, so we're enjoying it.
So there's this rapid rise to success, almost a championship in your first full season.
Yep.
Then the championship last year. Then this CONCACAF thing comes along.
Yeah.
And now you are one game away or one game left, depending on how things turn out.
Yeah.
Butts against the banister in this one.
They scored uphill battle.
Yep, they scored two on the road. Yep. That means you guys got to win 2-0 or
2-0, 3-1. We got to win by two.
Yeah,
essentially, got to win by two.
Either that, or it's win 5-4 or something. You know, I don't.
Yes, because that would be more away goals.
Yeah. So, put in context the importance of this CONCACAF championship potential.
Yep.
Versus the last 2 years of in the MLS Cup, hosting the MLS Cup, losing to Seattle the first time, coming back and getting revenge the second time.
Yep.
Do you quantify these achievements?
Yeah, I think I don't say this at all. I wouldn't say this without regret. I think if we can win this game Tuesday, it'll be the most significant win in MLS history. Because no team under the current version of the CONCACAF Champions League since it's been around in 2008 no MLS team has ever won this competition.
Right.
And it would put us in the world club championships. I mean, can you imagine if we get through this and played Real Madrid? I mean, it's in a real game, not, you know, an exhibition game, a friendly game. And so I think it could be the most significant victory ever in the history of MLS. I think Toronto FC, you know, winning MLS Cup last year is probably the most significant victory. But this would put it at such a different magnitude if we were ever able to get through this, because the Mexicans, those teams have been kicking our butts for a long time. And if you look at the records, I think we're 3-30-something against them in terms of MLS competition against Liga MX. This would be a massive statement worldwide that MLS has closed the gap, and they've kind of arrived as what you'd call a legitimate. I think we're legitimate, but I think worldwide there's still questions, and I think it'd say, wow, because everyone worldwide respects Liga MX.
Well, we'll find out tomorrow where that road leads. So in the last few minutes, let's move on to the latest adventure, and that is you add the title of president of the Toronto Argonauts to your list. Some would think, well, that's a little surprising, although both are now in the MLS family. Here's a soccer guy who's going to run a football team, but as we've documented, you spent 4 years with the Eagles, so you know a little bit about football. You also, I'm sure, have come to understand the challenge, the extraordinary challenge that is the Toronto Argonauts. Reluctance to take this job?
I wouldn't say reluctance at all. I was actually very honored that they wanted me to do it, and so that they thought highly enough of me to take on the franchise. I think it proves to be a smart decision, because I think having both teams play at BMO Field, you know, there were challenges between the two organizations trying to figure out who plays when and how we do that. I think we can find some efficiencies operationally on how the two franchises coexist. You know, I won't, you know, with TFC, I'm very involved on the soccer side and the player side and so on. That's not my wheelhouse with the Argos, and so really need to support and help Jim and Mark do what they do in the football side. So I guess I'll be more of a fan there, where on the soccer side, I'm intimately involved in those decisions. But I was honored, frankly. I've tried to learn as much as I can in a short time. It's an uphill battle there, too, right now with the CFL.
Well, I'll tell you. I mean, I've lived through this. I've been in this city virtually all my life. Two people who may be my two closest friends, I don't want to offend anybody, have been presidents of the Toronto Argonauts. Brian Cooper in the early 90s when Gretzky, McNall, and Candy owned the team. Mm. And then Keith Pelley was president of the Toronto Argonauts under Cinnamon and Sokolowski. Several years ago, both of them had scenarios where they built the fan base and it couldn't be maintained. It's never been as low as it is
right now.
Yeah. So you'd think there's nowhere to go but up, but attendance went down last year, actually.
Yeah. They had leveraged the Grey Cup the year before.
Yeah. You've lowered ticket prices.
Yep.
But there's a danger in doing that. You can't start giving them away.
No. That was a challenge with the Argos last year. There was quite a few comp tickets out there.
If you give them away, you'll never get them to pay.
Never get them to pay. And I learned that in soccer, especially in the minor leagues and so on. You have to value your product. You have to value your ticket. And so when I looked at the Argos and ticket pricing where it was relative to the other teams, it was actually higher than Toronto FC. And I just felt that, look, they can't fill the building now, and it actually goes back to my old Tampa Bay Mutiny days where you have this big stadium, but your crowds are smaller. Let's try to get rid of comps. We're not going to have complimentary tickets this year or freebies, but price it appropriately so we can hopefully reattract families again and maybe a kind of a new generation of Canadians who want to come out, and maybe they like the NFL, but hey, let me see what the CFL is like, because we've missed some generations here. Based on everyone I've spoken to, it's a bit of an aging audience right now. And how do you reinvigorate that?
Well, one of the things, you don't need me to tell you this stuff. The CFL is viewed by younger people as not as good a league as the National Football League, which probably goes without saying.
Yep.
But they view it as not subservient, but it's a lower grade. And they don't want to, they say, well, I'm not going to go. I'm an NFL fan. Soccer, on the other hand, you do very well attendance-wise, very well economically. And yet you, even you wouldn't suggest that this league, MLS, is on a par with the Premiership.
No, no.
Or
not,
La
not
Liga or Serie A.
No.
You know, it's a, and yet many of your fans are also fans of
They're fans of both.
Of both.
Yeah, yeah, very, very much so.
So how do you get that young NFL fan in Toronto to support the Toronto Argonauts?
Yeah, and look, we've actually talked about this because part of our strategy with TFC over the last few years was there's this thing called Euro snobs, right? MLS isn't good enough. Mm-hmm. And part of our thing was, hey, you can be a Juventus fan and wear your local team. And you can be a Manchester United fan and wear your local team. And the more we had people come out, they enjoyed it. I mean, it's actually good soccer still, and there's good players. And this all of a sudden, this crowd came together and the team was winning, which people like, right? It's a good product. And so now you look at this NFL comparison, right, which I think is very similar to the English Premier League and MLS. You can be a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, a Detroit Lions fan, and still be an Argos fan. And we think it's good football. Jim Popp would tell you the athletes here, a lot of times, are just as good as the athletes in the NFL. They're usually not the size, though. So, you know, 6'3", 255-pound linebacker in the NFL, in the CFL, maybe 6'2", 220, 225. And so he says that athletically, the league is just as good.
Irrelevant to the fan base, though. They don't care.
But if it could still be enjoyable and the team has to win, I'm a big believer in that. You need a product that when the fans leave the game, they said, hey, that was good. Our team won.
Yeah.
But that's something I think they could see good football. And if you are a fan in the NFL, it's still football. You know, it's the rules are a little different. And I kind of have my own cheat sheet on the 13 or 14 differences at the CFL and the NFL. But it's football. You know, Jim and Mark's said it to me, Bill, it's still football.
Yeah.
You know?
About 30 seconds. How long do you plan to stay in Toronto?
Look, you know, it's funny. My wife and I were talking about this yesterday. I will be here as long as they have me. I think this Toronto FC team has a lot of runway. I think this is going to be a team that's good for a long time. And that's my goal. If we can turn the Toronto Argonauts around and really make this back into being a fabric of the community, life is good, and hopefully we'll be here for a while.
It's a challenge, though. I mean, yeah. As I said, 25, 30 years of the same kinds of stories.
Yeah, yeah.
Celebrity owners, non-celebrity owners, multimillionaires, people who sunk a lot of money into this franchise, and nobody has deeper pockets than MLS. But it has been really tough to bring the Toronto Argonauts back. I can remember when they used to sell out every game.
No, I know, and people show me the pictures, and they tell me the stories, and a lot of times it's dads and their sons, you know, out to the games.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a big part of the generational gap that we've lost here. And so I, the one thing, it's, you know, I went to a few games yesterday. It was fun.
Yeah, it is fun.
Enjoyed the games.
Congratulations on the success you've
Thank
had
you.
So far. Continued
Thank
success, and thanks a lot for stopping by
thanks,
here.
Bob.
It was
Thank
great
you.
To see you. Bill Manning, the president of TFC and the Toronto Argonauts. The two championship franchises in Toronto. This has been Spotlight.